The Hand of Robin Squires, Chapter 15. The next morning, I was reminded by the abrupt clang of metal coming from the direction of the ship that I must return to the island. It was the last thing I felt like doing, but I knew that my uncle would begin early to organize work crews. I did not want him to discover my absence and send Billy Bowles searching for me, nor did I want him to know about Actodon. He would no doubt scoff at my friendship with an Indian. In his view, Indians were savages, and already my friendship with Actodon was too important to be held up to his scorn. More sounds of metal mixed with ruckus, shouting voices, drifted across the water. The fog still wrapped us in a white shroud, giving the sounds a strange, eerie quality, as if they came from no physical place. Shivering as much due to the sensation as from the early morning chill, I got up quickly. "I must return to the island," I said. "I have work to do." "I come," Actodon announced. "No," I said firmly. "It is better you stay here on the mainland." "I come," he insisted. "I trade." "But my uncle is very busy. He will not wish to be bothered." "No bother. I bring beaver skin. Get axe for Tagalak."
"Who is Tagalak?"
"My brother. He marry it with Sowek in 2 days. I get eels for feast and," he added proudly, "I get axe." Now that I understood why he wanted to trade, I did not see how I could refuse to help him. We had dozens of tools aboard the Queen's privateer. Surely my uncle would be willing to trade an axe for a beautiful beaver skin. "All right," I agreed. "You come." Actodon smiled. "I stay to trade. Then I go get more eels and go back to my village." The three of us, Actodon, Miko, and I, got into the canoe and set off into the mist. We followed the island shore around until we came into the cove where the Queen's privateer was anchored. It loomed out of the fog like some phantom ship. As we came up close, I saw the members of the crew were moving equipment over the floating wharf. My uncle, I guessed, was probably in the clearing where the shaft was located. Still unnoticed, we beached the canoe. I led the way uphill through the underbrush, while Actodon followed, carrying his prized beaver skin, Miko close at his heels. The little dog was the perfect hunting companion. Watchful, silent, never barking, even though there were strange men around us. My uncle stood at the top of the hill beside the shaft. The logs and canvas had been removed, revealing the deep hole into which some of the men were slowly and carefully disappearing with baskets and tools. As we came closer, I could see a ladder down to the first platform. My uncle watched as Billy Bowles supervised several men rigging a pulley over the shaft. The sturdiest branch of the large oak tree beside the opening extended well over the shaft, and it was from this branch that the pulley was being suspended. My uncle heard my footstep, for he whirled around and suddenly, to see Actodon following behind me. At first, his expression was one of disbelief, but it quickly changed to anger. Although he looked straight at Actodon, his words were for me only. "And who is this?" he snapped. "This is Actodon. He came over to trade a beaver skin for an axe." "What do you mean, trade a beaver skin for an axe? Have you lost your wits?" I ignored this comment. "He wants to trade with you," I repeated. "What is this nonsense about trade? We have no time for trade." He waved his hand toward the shaft. "You know we have work to do. We cannot have savages traipsing all over the island to trade animal skins." "He isn't a savage," I said as evenly as I could. "He's an intelligent person, just like you and me." "Is that so?" My uncle's response bore more than its usual weight of sarcasm. "So you're already an authority, are you? Where did you meet him?" "Over there," I pointed vaguely toward the mainland. My uncle's reaction to this was one of incredulity. "Surely you're not stupid enough to go to the mainland," he spluttered. "You could have been murdered by the savages." "He's alone. His people do not live here," I explained. "They live in a village far down the coast." I immediately regretted giving him this information. His eyes narrowed. Well, now, since that is the case, he will have to stay here with us, he said coolly. Unfortunately, Acton did not hear our words. He stood there a little to one side, watching the men securing the pulley. Miko sat quietly beside him, his small brown body poised for whatever action was required of him. What do you mean? I asked quickly. What I mean is that now that he is here, he will have to stay. You can't do that, I cried. I can, and I will. If I let him go, he will return with the others to trade, and they will become a nuisance. I can always use another slave. Before I could protest further, he called to the first mate. Mr. Bowles, you and Wharton, take this, he gestured towards Actedon, this savage, and chain him. As the two men came towards Actedon, I shouted, Go, run there! An arm seized me around the neck, and a hand was clamped over my mouth, choking off my words. My uncle had a firm hold on me. I struggled hard, but against his height and superior strength, I was powerless. Actedon dashed across the clearing, but he was too late. Billy Bowles and Wharton were already on him. He struggled valiantly, kicking at his pursuers with his feet, striking out with both arms. As soon as Billy Bowles reached for Actedon, Miko grabbed hold of the first mate's leg and held on tightly. The big man swung his foot back and forth, trying to shake him loose, but Miko would not let go. Enraged, Billy Bowles took a pistol from his belt and brought it down hard on Miko's head. There was a sharp crack of bone as the skull split. The little dog yelped once with pain and rolled over into the bushes. The blow had killed him. Even though he was obviously dead, Billy Bowles gave the body several vicious swings with his boot, kicking it so hard that the blood spurted from the dog's mouth. By this time, Wharton had been joined by three others, and together they pinned Actedon to a tree. Still, he lunged and strained in an effort to get free. These savages are uncommonly strong, my uncle mused. He will be useful, very useful indeed. Perhaps it is a good thing he happened along after all. It was at this point I began to hate my uncle, and to understand how cruel and merciless he could be, how totally without feeling. I struggled against him, but still he held me firm. In his long arms, I was as helpless as a fly caught in a spider web. The end of chapter 15.